There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Back for the second hour of the show and back with news of a goal. Chris McCarthy.
Yeah, 36 minutes on the clock at the Vitality Stadium. It's now Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1. It's Alexis Sanchez who wins it just on the halfway line. He feeds the ball into the path of Ashley Young, who returns it to the little Chilean. It's his ball across goal, and there's the man who is on fire right now, the Frenchman Anthony Martial. It's his fourth goal in the last three games, a left-footed finish. Asmir Begovic is going one way. He reverses it into the near post. Does Anthony Martial. Smiles on the faces of Jose Mourinho and Michael Carrick, the coaching staff of Manchester United. They've scarcely deserved it, in all honesty. Bournemouth have been much the better side in the opening 37 minutes. It's David De Gea who has been the busier of the two goalkeepers, but that matters. Did one.
Plenty of football going on at the moment. Let's stick with that one as well, because yeah, I know Manchester United come in for a bit of stick, don't they, as well. They are whipping boys for many other neutral fans the world over. I've got two Man United fans in here. You know what, I like a big cheer to go up when a goal goes in, and we were sat up here up on the rooftop garden. We're down here at Barasti broadcasting live from the rooftop garden. We've had a bit of a change in formation as well for the second hour. Archie's gone up front, Tom's taken more of a defensive role. I've come back a bit. I've got my back to it.
I'm still marshalling the midfield.
You're just marshalling the midfield, but we're going to try Archie up front if that's all right.
That's
McCarthy.
Fine.
You okay with
that's
that?
Fine. Yeah? I'm totally fine with him.
Yeah, we believe in him. But I just
thought
he
can do the least.
But
damage.
We were sat here doing the bit, and a big old cheer went up when that goal went in. I like that.
United are still, they move the needle, as I like to say, Thomas. But listen, there's a lot of fans from all over the world, whether it be Chelsea, Manchester City. We know they're popular out here. Liverpool will bring a big support, I'm sure, later. Arsenal will bring a big support when those two teams meet a little later this evening. But yeah, Manchester United fans, it's fair to say they are outnumbering their Bournemouth counterparts down here at Barasti. And United, for this afternoon anyway, have given their fans something to cheer about. They're back in it.
No goals to report over in Spain, where Leganes take on Atletico Madrid at the moment. No goals also to report over in Scotland, where it is St Mirren taking on Rangers. Celtic take on Heart Midlothian at 7 o'clock local time here in the UAE later on. There's also a couple of other games. Hamilton Academical taking on Livingston. Hibs against St Johnstone. Motherwell against Dundee. I know you want to talk about a Scottish football a little later on, so why don't we just do that now quickly as well. Neil Lennon in the news over the week.
Yeah, in the news for where to begin on this one. There was, fair to say, a tempestuous Edinburgh derby over the course of this past week at Tynecastle. Hearts nil, Hibs nil was the final score, but it was what went on the pitch. We saw Florian Kimberi, he was sent off, the young Swiss striker for Hibs. I felt it was a little harsh. I know the argument from the Hearts players was he led with the elbow. I felt it was a second yellow. I think he had already been on a booking. He was given his marching orders. That then kick-started. There were so many deplorable actions in this. The Hibs goalkeeper came in for a lot of flack. He was actually struck by a fan off to fetch the ball as it went out for a goal kick. And then Neil Lennon, Hearts scored a goal. It was rightly chalked off for offside. Neil Lennon, I've been in a little Twitter war with one or two of my followers today about this. He turns round and celebrates. There's no doubt about it. He's been accused of inciting the Hearts fans. That's all good and well. It's a passionate sport. Fans have incited Neil Lennon since the day he set foot in Scotland, playing for Celtic 18 years ago. He turns round, he celebrates. It might be a little overzealous. What we don't want to see, and you cannot legislate for, is one of those fans throwing a coin which strikes Neil Lennon on the face. He then drops to the ground. The police are involved. It becomes, as we would say in Scotland, a bit of a stramash. What has then since transpired is Neil Lennon, in a very emotional, a very heated press conference yesterday, has told it as it is. Scotland has a huge issue with sectarianism. He said himself, it is racism. He feels that he has been vilified from the moment that he set foot in Scottish football. He is an Irish Catholic. He is a Northern Irish international, or he was a Northern Irish international, playing for Celtic Football Club. I'm not going to get into the history of all the political and the religious connotations with that, but it's a big deal. He came in for an awful lot. There was one effigy that was painted on one of the walls outside Tynecastle that said, "Hang Neil Lennon." I mean, we cannot have that in this day and age. And what Neil Lennon was saying yesterday, very articulate, he was emotional, but he was very, I think he was calm for the most part. He was very articulate, and he said, this can't happen anymore. For too long now, you boys, pointing to the press guys in Scotland, have written about the fact that this happens. The chants in the stands, Celtic fans guilty of it, Rangers fans guilty of it. There have been many, many instances where Scottish football has been dragged through the mud, and Neil Lennon essentially yesterday was saying, I've had enough. This needs not be trivialised. This needs to actually go and maybe reach into the political sphere. He says he's not a politician, it's not up to him to sort it, but I've been saying this for a long time now. The penalties imposed, whether it be from the governing bodies of Scottish football, English football, UEFA, FIFA, they're not strong enough, Tom. They're not strong enough. We need to, whether it be corruption in the game, whether it be racism in the stands, we need to stamp it out once and for all. And by doing that, there needs to be hefty penalties. And if that requires points deductions, if that requires expulsion from certain tournaments, then let that be the case, because it's high time now that clubs need to take far more responsibility over the actions of their fans in the football stadium.
Not for a minute condoning any of those actions, not for a minute saying that I'm taking a stance on this one, playing devil's advocate just for the purpose of this conversation as well. There will be those saying that, let's have a look at Neil Lennon as a character from a player's point of view. He was a man who played with his emotions on his sleeves.
Competitive.
Let's have a look at Neil Lennon from a coach's point of view. You know, he knows not how to entice, but how to wind fans up. And he has done in the past. He's got a bit of history there. He's played the role. All of a sudden, he's playing the contrite role here. He knew what he was getting into with this whole thing. Not for a minute saying that the blatant racism that is being levelled at him and needs to be stubbed out. But Neil Lennon playing the holier-than-thou role, going, it's your boy's fault. It's you boy's fault.
I think
he's a man that divides opinions, and he's been very good at dividing opinions in the past.
He does. No doubt about that. He divides opinions, Tom. But there's a line, and yes, he's pushed that line on occasion. But come on, spray painting a wall, hang Neil Lennon, sending that man bullets in the post. I mean, they are all things that are absolutely not right in any walk of life. And I point to you, why is it that Jose Mourinho is able to slide on his knees as he did then? What a character Jose is. What a character he is. Remember the shush sign to the Liverpool fans, all of that? Because I am a firm believer three to Chelsea the other week. I'm a firm believer in this. And I've said this. I actually think the restraint that managers and footballers show actually needs to be made more of a thing, because they should be applauded at times. Some of the vitriol, some of the disgusting things that are normally only written on social media but said in stadium up and down the country, and I could be talking about Scotland, I could be talking about England, Italy, Spain, wherever, some of the things that are said takes massive constraint from these individuals. They deserve a medal for that, because if it was me, I'd be turning off. I really would, and I'd probably be getting the Red Ross, was it, from Friends? The Red Ross! But, you know, from Neil Lennon's point of view, you're right to say he is a bit of a divisive character, but we cannot sit here and say throwing coins. If so what, he turns round and celebrates the fact that the opposition haven't scored a goal. Just like, had that goal been given, Tom, the Hearts fans sat behind Neil Lennon would have been throwing worse at him. They would have been celebrating. They would have been in his ear saying awful, awful things. So I think there's a balance. I know what you're saying with Neil Lennon. He is a divisive character. But some of the points that he made in that press conference, and I would implore for any of you that are interested to know a little bit more about the history of Scottish football and where he's coming from, watch it. I watched it this morning on YouTube. It's very passionate. It's very raw. He raises one or two good points. And let's hope now there's a discussion to be had, because there is no place for coins. There are no place for the levels of abuse. And I take your point, sometimes he maybe crosses or edges that line, but some of the abuse that man has taken since setting foot in Scotland makes me not really a proud Scotsman. It really does.
Let's go to a short break. When we come back, rugby.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Right, let's just bring it to date with the scores. Half-time in the Premier League, Chris McCarty.
Yeah, we head down to the south coast, the Vitality Stadium, where it is half-time. It's Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1. Callum Wilson, who, as I said at the outset, is a fine player, come into real form as he did a couple of seasons back before he suffered a serious knee injury. It was he that put Bournemouth ahead, culminating in what was a real dominant 15-minute opening from Bournemouth. It could have been and should have been ahead before then. Ryan Fraser stinging the feet not the hands, the feet of David De Gea. Junior Stanislas as well missing a gilt-edged opportunity, but it was Callum Wilson just sliding home after being played through on the run by Junior Stanislas. Manchester United took time to warm up. They would eventually draw level. It was Alexis Sanchez in today ahead of, the dropped Romelu Lukaku. The official word is that he's injured. Sanchez playing up front. It's he that wins possession on the halfway line. He plays the ball on to the right to Ashley Young. He in turn feeds it back into the path of Alexis Sanchez. Cross goal it goes. Anthony Martial, right place, right time. His fourth goal in the last three matches. That was about it for Manchester United. They failed to create too much. Jose Mourinho will be much the happier of the two bosses because his side are level at the break. It's Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1.
No goals in either the other games over in Spain or Scotland. We'll bring up to date as and when they go in. Let's turn our attention to the world of rugby. We'll talk internationals in just a few moments' time, but Mark Archer explained something to me. We had action last night. We got action again today over in the UK in the club system as well. It's called the Premiership Rugby Cup. It's new to me. What is it?
The Premiership Rugby Cup is the competition they play, Tom, during the international window. So when the Autumn Internationals are taking place and when the Six Nations are taking place, when a lot of the club players are off doing international duty for any of their teams, they play what's called the Premiership Cup, which comes a bit, I guess you could kind of say it's a bit like a League Cup or in football. It's not always the strongest teams. Again, a lot of the stars are off playing for England or Scotland or Wales and playing sort of for their country. So it's a cup competition that's played during these sort of international windows. There are a couple of matches today in that Premiership Rugby Cup. Exeter Chiefs are hosting Bath and Leicester Tigers are taking on Worcester. So there are club rugby continuing in the UK and in France, of course. But there's, of course, all the chat's really about the beginning of the Autumn Internationals, which gets underway today.
We got underway a little bit earlier on with your All Black New Zealand team playing Japan. In Japan, was this?
This was in Japan, in Tokyo, and it's an interesting game. 100 points were scored in this, but there were 8 debutants for the All Blacks. Why? Because the majority of the 50, well, of the starting team, New Zealand play England at Twickenham next weekend, and they decided to give themselves the best chance of competing against England next Saturday, and of course then against Ireland the following Saturday in Dublin, was to send a majority of the starting lineup ahead, advance party ahead. So they called in what's called the Baby Blacks, 8 debutants there. And so again, many of that starting 15 have travelled to the UK, are involved in promotional duties, but to get over jet lag, to get up to speed, and basically get a rest at what's been a pretty torrid international season for them. They've been playing since June. They've just come through the Rugby Championship. They played last weekend the third Bledisloe match against the Wallabies, and again, big schedules coming up for them, particularly England at Twickenham and Ireland in Dublin. But I can say 100 points were scored, a great advertisement for rugby. We're 1 year away exactly. This weekend and 1 year, Tom, what is it? World Cup final in Tokyo. So it's a good chance for the All Blacks, who have now spent 2 weeks in Japan, to acclimatise. Look at the hotels, look at the logistics, look at the training facilities, play at the grounds they're going to play at next year. And so it's been a good chance for the management, the staff and many of the players to get into the feel for what is going to be like in Japan next year. And they've big tick there, they've achieved that mission.
I watched some of this game a little earlier on today, and credit to Japan, because they obviously wanted to play some open rugby. They scored some nice tries as well in it, but they came up against a stronger team. And I suppose if you're talking about that strength and depth, you know, if these are the Baby Blacks and be able to put, sorry, not box, the Baby Blacks, then this is a statement in itself that they've got such strength in depth, as they have done for many years now.
Yeah, and they still had some of the big name players playing in the side. Yeah. The likes of Richie Mo'unga, who's a star of Super Rugby, is the backup to Bowden Barrett. He started at 10. Waisaki Naholo started on the wing. They had a few forwards. Dane Colb's coming back from injury. So they've got plenty of some big name players there, but just guys who needed an extra run, extra a game. And again, 8 debutants. It's good to show the depth there in this match. But 100 points scored, very open match. The All Blacks scored 10 tries. The big star for them, the victory was 69 points to 31. Nani Lapape scored a hat-trick of tries. Let's just listen to the highlights of his try scoring. 10 tries for the All Blacks. Let's just have a quick listen.
The kick ahead from Waisaki Naholo. 3 chasing, 1 getting back. Sets up for Lapape. And Nani Lapape is in for the try.
2.5 minutes to play in the first half here at the Ajinomoto Stadium in Tokyo.
crash ball from Laumape, feeds it up, he goes all the way. While waiting for the pass was Milner Scudder, and in the end it didn't have to happen. Taken quickly by Evans, Laumape looking for a hat-trick, he's got it!
That was Naoni Laumape scoring a hat-trick for the All Blacks earlier today, 69 points to 31. Bigger things await the All Blacks, though, because this time next week we'll be eagerly anticipating that big match at Twickenham. All Blacks in England haven't played, Tom, for the best part of, what, over 2 years now, maybe 3 years, and it's the match that they've wanted. England, something in a bit of a terminal decline in the last 12 months, but it'll be a cracking atmosphere at Twickenham next weekend. The All Blacks, who haven't played there in a long time against England, that is one match to mark your card for. And then, good show by Japan. They showed up, they had a full-strength squad there. Former All Black Jamie Joseph is their coach, and they'll be looking to perform with dignity as they have done in previous World Cups. So the All Blacks 69 defeated Japan 31. Three matches this afternoon though, Tom. 6:45 in Cardiff, Wales will take on Scotland. Then at Twickenham, England take on South Africa. And then the late kickoff is over in Chicago, good old US of A, where Ireland taking their show to the road, taking on the Italians, 12 o'clock midnight.
Let's talk about the England game if we can, because I've got a feel for Manu Tuilagi, haven't you? He's been playing some great club rugby in the build-up to this particular opportunity. He's got himself back into good favour with Eddie Jones. He's been performing well, by all accounts, in camp for England. And then in the last furlong, another injury.
He's frustrating, is he, Manu Tuilagi? He's so talented. He's been injury-plagued for the last couple of seasons, and it's been tough for Eddie Jones to give him the chance to really select him. He was named in the reserves for this match this afternoon, and then he's pulled up lame in the last 24 hours. So you just want to see him get on the field, because he is a proper world-class talent. He gives them a bit of point of difference. He's very direct. He's very bruising. And he gives them some world-class talent in the midfield.
He's rejoining the squad tomorrow, though. I find that, how much of this is mental with Manu?
Well, I think I don't know how severe his injury was. He was named on the bench to play. That means he probably would have got a run out today at Twickenham, and maybe the injury isn't that severe. So he has a bit of a mental scar with the All Blacks because he did well.
He reminds me a little bit. Remember Louis Saha? Louis Saha seemed to be perennially injured. And remember Sir Alex Ferguson eventually came out to say, with Louis, a lot of it was upstairs.
Darren Anton.
Yes, absolutely. Sitting that, where you wonder, and again, I would never say this, if Manu Tuilagi was sat in front of me, I don't think, I'd maybe word it slightly differently, but I wonder if there's just a mental issue there.
So you're saying old sick no Tuilagi, that's what you're saying, Chris McCarty.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
I'm sure Manu Tuilagi would love to take the field. This type of bruising encounter against the Springboks is right up his sort of, is right in his element. And again, he had a wonderful, his career-defining game was against the All Blacks all that 4 or 5 years ago, where England had that great win. I think it was 2012 against the All Blacks, 2013 maybe, against the All Blacks, which was his defining game. He scored a couple of tries. He caused havoc with the All Blacks every time he got the ball, and he really, that was England, the dominant, you know, statement from England a couple of years ahead of that World Cup 2015.
I think he'll be missed as well. I'm going to watch on this game with interest, because I think England have got some major question marks over certain positions for their starting 15.
Well, lots of injury
problems.
None
more so than their centres at the moment. Benteo comes in at 12 for this game. I mean, Benteo's had a shocking season.
Well, we talk about injuries. Here's a man that Eddie Jones has
been. What's he done since the Lions?
Well, he's played 28 minutes of rugby this season, and he's going to start against the Springboks. So, yeah, and this is kind of funny for Eddie Jones. He's kind of got a free pass in some ways with the Autumn Internationals. So many injuries in his forward pack, in his back line, that he's had to pluck players with little experience. So in some ways, he's kind of got a...
Is he getting a free pass if they lose all of these matches?
I don't know. I mean, they've got South Africa. Now, South Africa are on an upward curve, an upward tangent. Yeah. England are on a downward curve. England, South Africa, beat the All Blacks 3 weeks ago in Wellington. Probably should have won in Johannesburg, absolutely, but got pipped up by the All Blacks there. England, on the other hand, have lost six out of their last seven matches. Springboks beat them 2-1 in the series. And look, so this is England's summer. They've got
New Zealand,
they've
Australia.
Got New Zealand next weekend and Australia. It's conceivable that they could lose all those three matches.
They beat Australia for me. They'll get beat by the All Blacks, and yeah, they might lose today.
I think they'll. I mean, it's such an experimental. I mean, there is there's two schools of thought, isn't there? It's not bad to have injuries now, a year out from a World Cup. At least it gives you an opportunity Absolutely. To blood a couple of young players, have a look at a couple of formations. But 10 caps from your back row taking on a Springboks team who are chomping at the bit at the moment. They're playing some great rugby. Brad Shields, Tom Curry, Mark Wilson as your back row going in to play the Springboks at Twickenham. 10 caps between them.
Well, they've got some big issues in the front row as well, because you've got Maku Vinopola out alongside his brother. Joe Marler's just retired, so you've got two of the biggest props there that perform for England not there. So Eddie Jones is short of experience in the front row, but he's short in the back in the back three of the loose forwards as well.
Starting.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing to me as well, because you know Carl Sinclair has been developed as an impact sub, hasn't he? Yeah. Comes on for the last 20.
A finisher,
yeah. And he does a very good job of that. He's a bit in your face, etc. You know, can he do that for the 80 for this particular game remains to be seen.
Dylan Hartley back, Jamie George on the bench.
And I mean, there are all sorts of question marks there. Owen Farrell as well. I mean, Farrell plays 10 in this game, which is completely against what he's been saying in the recent month, where George Ford was his go-to 10. And if you've got problems at 12, why not play Farrell at 12, which you have been doing up until now?
Well, I think this is horses for courses, and Eddie Jones wants to match up against the physicality of the Springboks. And so it's going to be interesting. Let's just have a quick listen to Eddie Jones. He talks about he has utmost confidence in Ben Teo starting after only 28 minutes of rugby this season. But he's got massive injury issues to deal with. 1 year away, Tom, as I said earlier, 1 year away exactly this weekend from that World Cup final. Can Eddie Jones pull around? This is what he had to say about Ben Teo in this match this afternoon.
Well, I just find that with some experienced players, as Ben is, having played the high number of high-level games in both rugby and rugby league, that they come around quicker, and he's had a good physical preparation. We've done a couple of good days of training here, and he's got through that pretty well. And I'm pretty convinced he can handle a test match.
Talk to us about Manu Tulangi. Fit enough only for the bench, or what's the thinking behind what you're going to do with him?
Yeah, we're just bringing him through nice and slowly. You know, he's had a long time out of rugby. He's back playing. He's been back playing for his club. We just feel his first game back, he's better off to come off the bench, find his feet a bit, and then after that we'll see. We had to dig fairly deep given the number of people unavailable. I think we've lost in excess of 400 caps. So the forward pack's probably the most inexperienced forward pack we've put out. So loose head props, you know, we've got two young guys there, Ben Moon and Alex Hepburn. It's a great opportunity for them. Mark Wilson, we've taken that he can handle the eight position. He's played a little bit there before, and we know he's going to give us everything he's got. We're really excited. You know, there's different ways to skin a cat, as we saw with Japan against South Africa. You don't have to have the biggest players in the world. And so it's different for England, because we normally have a big forward pack. We've got a smaller, inexperienced forward pack, but they can't wait to get out there.
That was Eddie Jones talking about the big match this afternoon. Start of the Autumn Internationals, England at home, Fortress Twickenham taking on South Africa. Rassie Erasmus, well, he's got a few selection issues as well. He's missing two of his stars
time.
No, Faf de Klerk and Willie LaRue have been held by their premiership clubs to play in the premiership there. But he's got a bit of depth. I mean, he's on an upward trend. Damian Williams is a key thing. And he comes in to start at fullback. And so it's good news in some way for South Africa. But Eddie Jones got a few worries that he's got to deal with. Let's have a quick listen to Rassie Erasmus talking about the big occasion at Twickenham. It all gets underway 7 p.m.
I think it's an obvious question that a lot of people will ask. I just think conditions and the tactical way England play, Ivan is maybe a better fit for a start. I think Ambrose is a more instinctive player, you know, which is great on hard grounds, and I think he'll definitely have impact in this game, but I thought in these conditions and the tactical way we want to play against England, Ivan is a better choice. Yeah, I think we always had Willie LaRue available, and obviously that's a luxury to have. Luckily, Damien has been with us for most of the test matches now. I think he's very comfortable in the old setup. Somewhere you have to start a test match, and I don't think it gets much bigger than Twickenham against England. And with the World Cup in mind, this is going to be such a valuable, not just for him, for the whole team. There's a few youngsters in the team. But, you know, he's going to play in front of a full house with lots of pressure and tough kicking games. So we learn a lot about him, and he deserves his chance.
South Africa have won 13 of their last 16 meetings, drawing one and losing two. They've won two of their last three tests, including that 36-34 victory over New Zealand. They're on the ascendancy at the moment.
They're just on an upward trend. It's been a very inconsistent Springbok team in the last couple of years. And I just feel as though Rassie Erasmus has kind of turned the table. They seem to be getting more consistent. They seem to be getting a lot of players are scattered around the globe for South Africa, so it's tough to get consistency when they come together for internationals, though. But if you look back at what they've done in recent weeks, great win against all odds against New Zealand in New Zealand. That's a fantastic win for them. Maybe a game they shouldn't have won, but then they should have beaten the All Blacks in Johannesburg a couple of weeks ago when the All Blacks got up the final death there, the final try in the final minute to win that match. So they've played a lot of tough rugby in recent weeks. I think they'll be champing at the bit to get a go at England, who might be a bit underdone as well. England have been in Portugal in camp for the last sort of week and a half, and they just might be a game short. They just haven't had much build-up into this match, where the South Africans are going to be pretty battle-hardened. And it's going to be a real close match. Twickenham's worth, you know, a good 7 points, good 7 to 10 points for England at home. 80,000 people plus, you know, screaming on for England. But I just think South Africa might just have a bit of momentum, a bit of form under the belt. The match ready. I think for me, South Africa might just put this in a very close match.
Plus, they've got some really exciting players coming through. The new captain, Khaleesi. Not only is he named after a character in Game of Thrones, he's performing like one as well at the moment.
Dyantyi on the wing. Yeah, he's probably one of the breakout. He might win the World Rugby Breakout Player of the Year. He's been sensational. He's
their two wings are great, and Kosi on the other wing as well. Yeah. I mean, two really sort of gun players at the moment who are just great for international rugby, because there seems to be that little element of excitement about. I know South African fans, BOC fans, can be quite harsh on their team, but it's interesting talking to them. There'll be a number of them down here at Barassi this evening, I can guarantee you that. They're excited by this team, which, you know, we were talking a minute ago about England building towards the World Cup and having a few issues and things like that. South African fans must be very, very confident building towards, because they've got that great balance, and I think that winning balance of experience and some really, really exciting youth players coming through.
No, they've got some talent, that's for sure, and I think they've shown in the last couple of weeks they've matched up against the best team in the world with the All Blacks and shown that they could have had two victories, which would have been, if you'd told any South African rugby fan 12 months ago, they'd laugh at you. But we're hoping to go live to Twickenham in the remainder of the show. Our good friend CVR, Calvin Roosevelt, is there going to the match, and he will give us a bit of appetite about what is the feeling from a South African supporter going into this match. So looking forward to speaking to CVR at some stage before 7 p.m. But if you're looking for somewhere to watch the rugby, of course, early kickoff is actually Scotland taking on Wales in Cardiff. Come on down to Brasney. It's filling up nicely. You've got Man United Bournemouth on the big screen. Then 7 o'clock, England versus South Africa at Twickenham. Lots of people gathering down here. I see plenty of Springbok shirts, plenty of English shirts. It's going to be a cracking atmosphere at Brasney for that kickoff at 7 p.m.
Well, two Scotland fans here, myself and, of course, Chris McCarty, watching on with interest as well. It's going to be interesting to see how Scotland... I always love this sort of time of year, don't you? Because you think we understand our national rugby teams. But a couple of months is a long time in international rugby.
It certainly is if you're
days.
A Scotland fan.
Exactly, but it's going to be really interesting to see how they come out the blocks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. The expectation has been rising, hasn't it, in the past... Certainly 12 months, Gregor Townsend replacing Vern Cotter. He's done a great job, hasn't he? I mean, we went and beat in Australia over the course of the past 12 months, and I appreciate we've had one or two blips along the road, but Scotland trending in the right direction, and I'm with you. I'm looking forward to seeing. Remember the last time as well that we played Wales, expectations, that opener in the Six Nations, they steamrolled us. We weren't at the races that day, and I'm sure that will be making up part of Gregor Townsend's team talk today. We got to go out there and we got to ensure that we exercise those ghosts, because we weren't nowhere near good enough at the Millennium Stadium the last time we met Wales. I'm looking for a far better performance. If we get that, I'm not going to say for one second we're up there going to win the World Cup in 12 months' time, Tom, but we can certainly bloody the noses of some of those
teams.
It's
tough, isn't it? It's in Cardiff. It's at the Principality Stadium. We know it's going to be a passionate crowd.
Principality. I keep forgetting it's not called Millennium anymore.
It's going to be. It's going to be. It's going to be a big old atmosphere down there. And you talk about ringing the changes as well. Four Scotland players retaining their place from their last win over Argentina back in June.
Wow.
Adam Hastings, keep an eye on him, fly half for Scotland today, son of Gavin. Of course.
Yeah, you're correct there, and interesting because we're seeing a lot of players now come back into the fold who went on that British and Irish Lions tour. For Wales though, Tom, seven returning British and Irish Lions are returning for Wales. That includes Jonathan Davies, who had a great tour of New Zealand, you know, a year or so ago. He's had a 12-month injury absence, arguably one of the best centres in the world on his day. And Gareth Anscombe will start at fly half. For Scotland, they welcome back a raft of regulars as well. The backs, Hugh Jones and Tommy Seymour come back into the Scottish lineup.
Big fan of Hugh Jones.
And forwards, Johnny Gray, WP Now, and Hamish
WP Nell from Glasgow.
Hamish Watson also start.
Glasgow Pretoria.
Yeah. Come back into the team. So what's interesting today is Wales give a start to Luke Morgan on debut on the wing, and he's been a seven star in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Is Luke Morgan. He scored, I think he's got 150 tries in sevens rugby, so he must be an absolute flyer. But he starts in the back three for Wales today. Warren Gatland's been off. I think, unfortunately, one of his parents passed away. He's been back in New Zealand. He's come back for this match. But really interesting to see how this match goes, because we don't see these two teams play often. It's almost like a bit of a friendly feel to it, but there's never such thing as a friendly in Rugby Union International. So Wales-Scotland gets underway, 6:45. Get on down to Barasti to watch that as well.
Alan Wynne-Jones as well, back in the second row. I mean, he's like the Pied Piper, not the Pied Piper. What's it? Who's the Peter Pan, isn't he?
Benjamin yeah. Button or someone?
Benjamin Button. What on earth is going on? How on earth does he get to continue like he does? Especially in the position he plays. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting game, this one. I always feel a bit nervous about calling these games, because as I was just saying to McCarty there, things change in international rugby, and it's going to be this is going to be something. And again, it's something weird about the autumn international, isn't it? Because it's almost that in-betweeny time where the teams that we see over the next 3 weeks probably aren't going to be the teams that we see turn out for the Six Nations in, what, 3-4 months' time?
You say that, though, and I think all teams now are looking at the calendar, and as I said earlier, 12 months away to the World Cup final, so it's 10, 11 months away to the World Cup starting. Coaches want to get their combinations right. They want to build experience and get caps. It's not really the time to experiment too much. If you've got starting 15s or starting 23s that they have in rugby now with the bench guys, they want to get the consistency, they want to get the fluidity, they want to get the relationships built, and then they want to also have their depth of guys coming into the game. So it's not really 12 months from a World Cup. You want to know who your guys are. And I think I read a piece from Eddie Jones earlier in the week. He said he's got 85% of his team selected already. I think most of the coaches would want to have 80 to 90% of their squads to go to Japan next year, done and dusted. It's just really, do they unearth a gem now 12 months out? Is a bolter coming into the lineup from either domestic rugby or can make a blow on the scene? Autumn international time of the year, Tom, maybe a player or two can really stand out. And the other nice thing about this Wales-Scotland match, it's the Doddy Weir Cup as well. So what a man, what a stalwart for the British and Irish Lions and for Scotland. Doddy Weir Cup, great cause as well.
Get your thoughts on the other game that's taking place. And, well, first and foremost, get your thoughts on the venue. Are you a fan of internationals going several thousand miles away to be played in different venues? It's an autumn international. It's against Ireland, between Ireland and Italy, two European nations who could quite easily have met halfway in somewhere, say, like Paris or something like that. Instead, they're going over to the States.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Soldier Field, Chicago. It's the scene of where Ireland actually defeated the All Blacks a couple of years ago, and they're their first ever win against the All Blacks. So, yeah, interesting to take the game far afield. I think Irish rugby fans are going to have some big weeks ahead of them in the next couple of weeks. And look, all teams are doing their effort to grow the game around the world. We've seen the All Blacks now in Japan for 2 weeks. We're seeing Ireland go to the USA and play this match. So yeah, personally, Tom, not an issue for me. I think it's
big
good.
Irish community there.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Look, not every week in, week out for these teams to go away, but once a year. And it's not every year, really. It's every couple of years. To take a big international into a different market could only be good for the growth of rugby.
Okay, so good for the growth of rugby from a branding perspective, from a branding point of view, makes sense. But then, first weekend of a packed autumn international schedule, having to come back from the United States over to Ireland to face one of the big guns of Southern Hemisphere rugby next weekend. Is that sensible?
It's a fair point, but I think the players are used to travelling.
Travelling in Europe.
They've done the medical stats, and I'm not sure this match that we're going to get all the starting players playing. I think this may have more the fairly about.
Oh no, he's rested several of the big guns.
Exactly, and the guys we know that Ireland have got some injury problems. Conor Murray's very, very doubtful for any of the autumn internationals, particularly the All Blacks next weekend, and maybe Joe Smith's going to try a few combinations, as it's O'Shea with the Italian team, isn't it? So I think this match will have more of a friendly feel about it than the other matches, but then it gives a lot of younger players a chance to really, as we said, make a statement, maybe make their mark with that World Cup only a year away.
Yeah, interesting to see Joey Carberry coming into the fly half role for Ireland. Johnny Sexton obviously being rested, as has Rory Best and a number of the other players. I think there's only five players that won that last game against
England. At Twickenham,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think only five have been handed starting lineups. So Joey Carberry in, a rare start for fly half for Ireland's opening autumn international. Leinster's Ross Byrne, Will Addison, who moved from Sail Sharks to Ulster last summer, could both make their test debuts as well off the bench over in Chicago. They play Italy in Chicago today. Then they come back. They play Argentina next weekend. And then, of course, they've got New Zealand on the 17th of November. And then, rather bizarrely, they've got Ireland against the United States, of course, over in Dublin. Because that makes sense, because you couldn't play United States and States, could you?
No, actually, the US are playing as well, and they're playing the New Zealand Maoris in the US. Okay. So I think I've got a feeling this match might be actually a double header. So there's two matches taking part in Chicago, or it might be tomorrow, but the USA are taking on the New Zealand Maoris team.
We take a short break when we come back. We will talk golf. In fact, oh man, Robbie, where is Robbie? He's away at the moment.
He's currently in the car heading back from Russell Kema. He said, "I'm in the car. Please come to me soon so I can talk all things golf." We're coming to you soon, Robbie, if you're listening.
Rob, we'll be with you in momentarily, okay?
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We'll talk golf in just a few minutes' time. Let's first get a quick update on the live scores. Premier League.
Yeah, we're into the final half hour. It's the hour mark has just ticked through. It's Bournemouth taking on Manchester United in the early kickoff. I can tell you it remains Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1. Bournemouth very good for the opening 15-20 minutes. Callum Wilson getting me some points. And I know you are listening, Robbie, so you'll be happy to know, or maybe a little disappointed to know, that Wilson has picked up some points for me in my fantasy football this week. A fine finish from Callum Wilson. Real good. By that point, Bournemouth should have probably been two up. They've had chances aplenty, or at least they did in that opening 15 minutes. Manchester United's equaliser, it came out of nothing, as so often has been the case in recent weeks. Their equaliser down at Stamford Bridge came out of nothing as well. It was an Anthony Martial finish after good work from Ashley Young and Alexis Sanchez. What I can tell you, though, in the opening 15 minutes of this second half, Manchester United have been much improved, it's got to be said. Luke Shaw should really have put Manchester United in front. Set scampering clear by Anthony Martial. He only had Asmir Begovic to beat, but the big Bosnian stayed big and made a big save to keep Bournemouth level in this one. 60 minutes on the clock then. It's Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1. I should also very quickly add, Tom, that Jose Mourinho has rolled the dice not once but twice. He's brought in Ander Herrera. He's brought on Marcus Rashford. Off has gone Juan Mata and Fred. He is looking to just crank up the pressure a little on Bournemouth. But 61 minutes on the clock, it's Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 1.
There have been goals over in Spain. We'll bring you details of those in just a few moments' time. There haven't been any goals over in Scotland. It still remains St Mirren against Rangers 0-0. 56 minutes on the clock in that game.
Yeah, indeed. The goals over in Spain. Leganés taking on Atletico Madrid. We're now into injury time on that one. Antoine Griezmann had given Atletico Madrid the lead, and in years gone past, a 1-0 lead for Atletico Madrid normally, or at least regularly, meant the 3 points. Not so today, though, because Guido Carrillo, who is on loan at Leganés from Southampton, I think he's Southampton's record signing, if memory serves me correct, he has levelled things up with 8 minutes to go, so it's into injury time. It's Leganés 1, Atletico Madrid 1.
Okie dokie, what's happening in the world of golf? Let's go to the European Tour. What you got for us?
Yeah, it's the Turkish Airlines Open from Antalya in Turkey. It's we've just almost got the completion of the third round, Tom, and I can tell you it's the man from China, the winner of the Omega Dubai Desert Classic, who leads after a sensational round today of 63. 8 under par for Haotong Li. What a round he's put together. That goes with rounds of 66 and 67, but 63 today in round three gives himself a two-shot lead at 17 under par. In second position is the world number two, Justin Rose. Two shots back, he's 3 under. He's got one hole to play today. He's had been very consistent in the first 2 days, two rounds of 65, but Justin Rose not really capitalizing on the low scoring today. He's at 15 under par, two shots behind Lee. In tied for third is Alexander Levy and Thorbjørn Olesen back at 14 under par. So Haotong Li leads the Turkish Airlines Open.
That's what's happening over in the European Tour. There is golf closer to home.
There certainly is. The RAC European Challenge Tour finale, grand final down in Ras Al Khaimah, of course, which has become a real hotbed for golf. Certainly European Challenge Tour golf in the last few years as well. And Robbie Greenfield has been down there. He was in the waters around Burj Al Arab this morning, was Robbie, taking part in the Dammam DXB Swim Fest. He's gone home. He's showered off. He's popped on the polo shirt. He's popped on down to RAC. I think he was in charge of the trophy presentation a little earlier this afternoon as well. And I'm delighted to say that he now joins us live on the line. A very good afternoon to you, Rob. Well, we'll try and get Robbie Greenfield on the line. Maybe he is a little bit busy still handing out that trophy presentation, but he was down there in Ras Al Khaimah. He will be giving us a little update as to exactly what went on. Of course, the players were battling 15 tour cards on the main European tour for next year, and as we've seen, there's been so many storylines, one of the biggest of which out of the European Challenge Tour in recent times, Mark Archer, Brooks Koepka, a man who earned his hard knocks, if you will, on the European Challenge Tour, now the world number one.
Yeah, fantastic story, Brooks Koepka. He had to go and do it the hard way. He had to go and play the Challenge Tour, the second tour in Europe, and go to some very far-flung locations and really have to scrimp and save and try and make his way as a professional golfer. But he succeeded on the Challenge Tour. He then went and had some great starts with what he did on the full European Tour, and he took that form then into a very confident professional career with the PGA Tour, and he's become a global superstar. Major after major, back-to-back winners this year, and he is one of the form golfers in the world at the moment, Chris, and fantastic story. He wasn't gifted a card, he wasn't gifted his way in by getting lots of invitations. He had to do it the hard way, the old school way, yep, of coming up through the tours and really proving his worth. And so, yeah, he's a fantastic story about how you can go from where he was to the rapid rise just by probably hard work, ability to put in the travel. In this day and age, we don't see too many of the American golfers come and play the European Tour, let alone the European Challenge Tour.
Right, let's get cross to Robbie Greenfield. He is hot-footing back from Ras Al Khaimah. I believe he is now there, and we can say a very good afternoon or very good evening to you, Rob.
Very good evening, lads. How are we?
Yeah, very well, my man. Very well indeed. How are you, more to the point? I didn't take to the waters around Burj Al Arab today. Before we talk all things rack, how's the body holding up after that little swim fest?
I think there were pieces of flotsam and jetsam that were moving faster than I was out there around the Burj Al Arab. It was an embarrassing performance. I don't know what the official time was, but all I do know is I think I arrived back on that beach about 40 minutes after your missus, Chris.
I do have your official time in front of me, in actual fact, Robbie. I can tell you, you're being a little harsh. I've got your time. Do you want to know your time, or do you want to wait and check it yourself?
Hit me.
Right, I can tell you, Robert, far quicker than you're giving yourself credit for, my man, because you did it in a time of 28 minutes and 50 seconds.
No way.
Yeah, under 30 minutes. The missus, okay, I should add, did it in 21 minutes, Rob, but never mind, that's the win for Miss Vera, and you owe us lunch. But anyway, that's enough of that nonsense. We'll talk all things golf. You've been down in Ras Al Khaimah. How's it been going on down there? What kind of day did you enjoy?
A fantastic day, the first time that the road to Ras Al Khaimah had accumulated with the grand final. Of course, if you recall, it's the third edition of the tournament, but the first time, it was previously in Oman that they had the grand final. This was the time where 15 of the top Challenge Tour players were awarded European Tour cards. And I might add, we might have seen a potential star emerge as well. Adri Arnau, remember that name, because he could be the next John Rahm, Chris. I know how much of a fan you are of John Rahm. This guy is like a carbon copy. He's Spanish. He's about 6'3". He is built like a baseball pitcher. And he is the biggest hitter on the Challenge Tour. He's won impressively with a score of 17 under, and I managed to catch a word with him afterwards for a tournament win that saw him finish second on the order of merit, that guaranteed him a European Tour card for the remainder of 2019 season. It was his first professional win, and it's fair to say he was emotional.
Yeah, it's been an amazing week, and you know, I've enjoyed every second of it, and to be able to come out on top is just amazing. It's a new feeling for me. This season I was looking to get that feeling, and to do it on the last event is just amazing.
Not many players win their first tournament on the Challenge Tour the way you did it, in such style. A birdie on the last hole, you were dominant throughout the course of the four rounds. Put it into words as to how it all came in together for you this week, because this is your first Challenge Tour, and what a stage to do it on.
Yeah, definitely. To do it on the final makes it even more special. But I think, you know, the most important thing was to don't think about all the surrounding stuff, just keep it as simple as possible, one hole at a time, and, you know, we were able to do it pretty well, me and my coach this week.
Euphoric now, but of course it's back to business in a couple of short weeks. I hear you're going to the PGA Tour, and of course you are now a full European Tour member as well. So I suppose it's about steadying your emotions and getting back down to the serious business of life on the European Tour.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I'm going to worry about in a day or so, because obviously I'm going to PGA Tour next week. But for the moment, enjoy this. It's been great, and now be able to celebrate it with my people and then think about the other stuff.
When you look at the success of the likes of Jordan Smith, Brooks Koepka obviously stands out as a player who came through the Challenge Tour ranks and got to world number one. Does that inspire you in terms of looking at those guys and what they've done and how they've competed on the European Tour, having come through these this breeding ground, if you like?
Yeah, obviously, like, Challenge Tour is a great way to step to the next level, and over here you need to be real competitive to earn anything you want to do around here, so that definitely helped them, and I'm hoping that it helps me, which I'm sure it will, and who knows, maybe I'm looking at them face to face pretty soon.
That is the voice there of Adrie Arnaus. He is the winner of the Rack Challenge Tour Grand Final. Very, I guess, very articulate there, Rob. A little like John Rahm in that regard. What do we know about Adrie? How old, and from seeing him up close today, is he someone you genuinely think can make a big splash on the PGA and the European Tour in coming seasons?
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of John Rahm only in the way that he looks and his physique. He's an impressive guy. He hits the ball an absolute country mile, which, you know, they all do in this day and age. But he stands out. He's the longest hitter on the Challenge Tour. And I caught up with our good friend Richard Raymond, who informed me that he'll be one of the longest hitters on the European Tour next season, Chris. It was the emotion with which he celebrated victory. He took the cap off. He slammed it on the ground. He fist-pumped exuberantly. It was a little bit like John Rahm's celebration at the DP World Tour Championship last year. And he's clearly a man with a lot of charisma and a lot of a great future. He's 24 years of age, which you might think, okay, so he's not that young, bearing in mind that people like Rory McIlroy were doing great things far younger than that. But this is his first year as a pro. So he's taken his time to get into it. He spent a lot of time in the amateur ranks, winning tournaments and coming up that way. It's his first year as a pro, and at the first time of asking, he finished second on the Road to Rath El Khaimah Grand Tour rankings, and he finished the season with a victory, his first one.
Last one from me, Rob, before we let you go off and enjoy your evening. You often talk about the depth, the strength and depth of world golf right now. Having watched the final round today, that European Challenge Tour event, the depth is definitely there. The quality, for anyone perhaps tuning in, not quite aware of what the European Challenge Tour is, essentially what you're seeing there with Adrie is being at the top of the mountain today. The quality runs deep and it runs vast, certainly with the European Tour game.
Well, yeah, remember the name of Robert Carlsen, former Ryder Cup player, former DP World Tour Championship winner back in 2010. He is playing Challenge Tour golf now, Chris. He finished middle of the pack today at Rath El Khaimah. Michael Hoey, another former European Tour player, was finishing about 12th, I think, today, and well down in the Challenge Tour rankings. So what's essentially been created is two European Tours. And a lot of these players who are on the cusp of playing full-time on the European Tour often get into a situation where they're yo-yoing between the two tours. And obviously there's a lot more riches, it's a lot more lucrative to be playing your golf on the main tour. But these guys are serious, serious players. And it just goes to show that there are just so many good golfers out there. It's an extremely competitive landscape.
It certainly is, Rob. Good man.
Rob, got to ask you how you're feeling at the moment. I know you were in the water a little bit earlier on, not on the golf course, obviously, but in the waters around the birds. How's the body?
Yeah, I've managed to cough up part of the Arabian Gulf come. It was a shock to the system. I think we got a little bit of a let-off. It wasn't a full mile. It ended up being about 1,100 metres, but that was about 900 metres more than I'm comfortable with.
Okay, fair enough. You're more of a sprint swimmer, are you?
I'm more in the Michael Phelps mold. You're absolutely right, yeah.
Oh, good lad.
Very,
yeah.
Very rapid.
Relay's your game.
Meters, but I really was lagging a little later on.
But fun experience?
Listen, it was great. It was a good turnout. And, of course, you know, Chris's missus is a former Sri Lankan national team swimmer, so no shame in losing to her. But it was a fantastic turnout. And hats off to all the guys that, that made sure that it went ahead, because I know there was some worries with the weather as well. The Coast Guard was a little bit concerned about some of the weather conditions. So great that it went ahead, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was a fantastic event to be a part of.
Good on you. Well done to you. Congratulations for finishing it as well. And thanks very much indeed for the update as well. And if you need a little bit of, you know, hydration, maybe a bit of protein just to recover from that, make your way down to Barasti. We're going to watch the rugby.
Good stuff. I'll enjoy it.
Good on you, Rob. Robbie Greenfield there joining us live on the line, backing his way down into Dubai. We take a short break. When we come back, we're off to, guess where? Guess what? Where do you think we're off to with TalkSport? We're off to the London Stadium, Bigora, Bigora.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.